This is Recovery in the Middle Ages, a podcast about two middle-aged suburban dads and their pursuit of life, love, and recovery. I'm Nat.
And I'm Mike.
And we are here to rock your world.
You're listening to the hottest new podcast in the recovery area.
Yes.
Yeah, ether, whatever.
Yeah, we're, I think both me and Mike are a little bit off this week.
My brain is completely dead.
Completely. We would like to say a few things at the beginning of the podcast. We want to talk about, you can get us on Apple Podcast app, otherwise known as iTunes. You can get us on Facebook.
Come to the Facebook group. We have so many new likes on the Facebook group. And it's just amazing. It's a lot of stress, frankly.
Very stressful. Yeah. Good. And, you know, we have an email. It's natx@middleagesrecovery.com.
Or mikerr@middleagesrecovery.com.
Right. Rate, review, subscribe, and that would be great.
Oh, one other thing before we move on. Mm-hmm. So we've gotten some feedback from listeners about our show, and it's been pretty positive overall.
Thanks.
I think so. But somebody suggested that we maybe delve into the world of doing interviews. I don't know if you have this on the outline to talk about later. I apologize if you do.
Are you straying from my outline?
There's things on the outline.
I'll give you show notes afterwards. I'll tell you what.
So if you are interested in being interviewed, if you have a recovery story, or any story really, and that you think would be a good fit for us, drop us a note at one of the aforementioned emails and we'll reach out to you and we'll set something up. We're really quite nice people.
Yeah, and only a lawyer would use the term aforementioned in regular speaking.
I can't help it. They make me talk that way at law school under the pain of, you know, of poverty.
Yeah, I mean, I love the idea of an interview. And I don't think, you know, because I listen to a lot of podcasts and it doesn't always, like the show doesn't always need an interview, but sometimes it really adds. And it doesn't have to be a celebrity, you know, because just getting someone like, you
celebrities
know.
We don't have. So
I
that's good.
I know. you know, our friend Aaron from the Dopey Nation suggested a couple of people like other parents, you know, she was thinking we should stick to the like being parents type of thing, which is definitely kind of the theme. But
so I was thinking of staking out, hanging out outside one of the bars in town at like 2 a.m. And seeing if I recognize anybody.
Guys walking out with wedding rings on.
Then we can, you know, sort of pop the question to them.
Yeah. Anywho. So look forward to that. My biggest concern is just the technical side of that. But everybody I ask say, oh, it's so easy. You can do Zoom. We have this magic Rodecaster.
We can do it on the magic board.
Yeah, it should be interesting. So we got a great show today for you. This kind of one of the stories I want to get into today is something that happened to me this week. It's pretty interesting. It has to do with John the Can Man. Before we get into that, Mike's also got his 9/11 story that, you know, I think it's pertinent due to where we are in the month of September. And also, this is just something I was thinking about. I wanted to check in a little bit with Mike and maybe vice versa. Now that we've sort of gotten to know the real us here, right. I wondered like what you're thinking now compared to what you thought about me before we started talking. Like, is everything you're learning now a total shock? Or were you like, yeah, I figured that guy for smoking crack and doing heroin.
No, the depth of your depravity certainly surprised
me. Doesn't it? Surprises us all, I think.
but honestly, nothing surprises me. I've been alive too long to be surprised by stuff
there
like
you
that.
Because
you know, you never know when you are in the suburbs and you see people when you're picking up the kids at school, the subject of prior addictions and bad behavior never really comes up.
No.
I'm glad we got the chance to get to know one another better, and it's good to know that there's somebody else in town that I can talk to about this kind of stuff, because I certainly there's most of the other people that I know from town would be shocked and then
shocked and horrified.
Yeah, horrified, yes.
And you know what? I was talking to one of our buddies, Dave from the Dopey Nation, not Dopey Dave, David M. And he commented about that we have a great chemistry. And part of that is not because we've known each other for so long, but one thing I've learned just being in recovery is addicts, alcoholics know each other. Like, we're not, you know, everyone isn't the same, but once you identify someone else who has struggled with recovery and has come through it or is still recovering, for me anyway, there's automatically, once you've exposed that to another person and vice versa, there's a closeness you immediately feel to that person.
Absolutely.
And so that's kind of, that was kind of like an instant way to like feel comfortable with Mike. That's something I've experienced too, just being in the rooms and stuff, like for the most part, complete strangers, you know, you feel comfortable, you know, telling them the, your darkest secrets because they're not judging you and you can feel comfortable with that. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
There's definitely, something to be, found in shared suffering, you know,
one alcoholic helping another.
Right. Well, you know, you come from a shared frame of reference and, you know, I couldn't go to my neighbor, definitely not my neighbors, but, and start talking to them about, you know, my feelings about, you know, how I feel in recovery and stuff. So, that is the upside to 12-step groups and stuff, you know, the community that's there is,
there's so much good that comes out of it. You know, I definitely think so.
I just wish you could have a community of addicts and alcoholics without the other stuff lays on top, but
yeah, that's right. But I did get a complaint from my wife at the last show that I was interrupting and talking too much. And I am going to try very hard to not be such an interrupting cow.
That means I have to talk more, though.
Exactly.
I'm looking at you. Irritating.
So, and now you added this to the notes, I think, the 9/11 story.
Yeah, I was just sort of thinking about it because it's you know, it's sort of the anniversary was last week, and I always think about it because I was down there that day.
Wow.
And you know, I've always sort of woven into my drink narrative, the fact that 9/11 sort of set me off, you know, on a spiral for a few years. And while some of that may be true, it's funny how we're our own revisionist historians, because I was late for work that morning. So I actually was down in the subway when the first plane hit the towers.
Wow.
And I worked at 100 Church Street, which was a block away from the World Trade Center. But the reason I was late is because I had been out at the bars in Williamsburg until 4:45 the night before.
And that would have been a Monday night.
It was a Monday night.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just, sometimes I think about that and I think to myself, you know, after I saw the towers fall, after, you know, I was, a piece of the plane actually landed about 20 yards away from me, the second plane, cause I was out on Church Street at the time. But after all that, and I walked back to my apartment in Brooklyn and met up with some friends, and then we proceeded to continue to, we went to bars all night long
on this, the day
on, after 9/11, and got home at like 7 o'clock in the morning, the next morning. So I was up, I guess, for 3 days, pretty much straight.
Wow. Yeah. So the bars and stuff were open that
bars were
night?
Open. So was the Coke bar, which, you know, they were doing a brisk business, let me tell you. They were only taking cash, but the other bars, none of the electronics worked, the ATMs or
anything. Right, yeah, so I remember they couldn't get a phone call. And
so they wrote what you drank down on a list and trusted that people would come back and pay them.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. It was a beautiful moment in New York. And I even did go back and pay two or three of them.
That's nice.
It's one I stayed away from for like 3 years after that. But anyway, I don't know. I could go into the 9/11 thing, but I think it's a little much, and it kind of bring the vibe a little down in the room. So
it's a collective mourning that this country has, and you know, more so for you know, people like, you know, you who were there. Like my wife was there too. She worked for Penguin Publishing at the time, so I, which is a town east of the city. But all of us, I think it's this collective mourning that we all kind of go through. And I think probably, I don't remember it causing me to like spiral out of control. I was 21 years old. I had just taken a break from college and I was working at a marketing company. But I don't recall if I was in the depths of my depravity at that point.
Yeah. Things got pretty dark for me for quite a while after that. And I attribute some of that to the stuff that I saw that day, the swan diving out of the windows and all that.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
But, you know, and God bless those people. But it actually, kind of got me to sit up and think to myself that I should maybe go to a therapist. Mm-hmm. So I found a Buddhist therapist, actually.
Really?
He's a Zen Buddhist priest at a temple in the West Village. Great guy. But I remember going to the first session with him, and the first we started talking a little bit, and he's like, "How much do you drink?" And I said, "You know, I drink a few nights a week." He's like, "How many nights a week?" I said,
"Eight."
Like usually five. Yeah, you know, right. Need to take a couple of days off to sort of recharge the batteries. And he's like, "And how much do you drink at each time?" And I was like, "About 8 pints of beer, right. Maybe 10." You know, he goes, "I think you're an alcoholic." And
really?
I said. Yeah, I don't know. I said, yeah, it doesn't seem like a lot of beer considering, you know.
Doesn't he know you're only an alcoholic when you say you are?
So he's like, listen, before you come back, I want you to go to an AA meeting. And I was like, yeah, I've been to those.
Oh, yeah. You know. Did you actually go?
No.
Of course not.
I didn't. I told him I went, though.
Oh, you did? Of course.
Yeah, because lying to therapists is part of the whole thing.
You know? I always lied to therapists and doctors.
He was great, but he eventually had to cut me loose because we weren't making progress.
Was not making progress. No, look, you tried.
I tried. But, you know, it took a couple of years before I was able to put that stuff in perspective. And that helped. I did end up drinking less, about 5 years later.
Yeah.
not right away.
Not right away. But, you know, like I said, 9/11, and maybe we can leave it there unless there's another punchline. Like, is there a punchline to a 9/11 story? No. I don't think
no.
so. It was just pretty much horror around.
It was just horror. Yeah. I don't know. It was just on my mind because of the anniversary last week. And every year I think about it a little bit less, but
yeah, you know, I know.
It's always there.
I avoided any. They started coming out with like documentaries like only a few years after, and I just couldn't watch it.
Can't watch it to this day.
You know, we could smell the buildings mm-hmm. burning. It was not that close.
Yeah. We had to go back and. We because I was a city attorney, we got special dispensation to go into the frozen zone, and they put us in the municipal building, no air conditioning. The windows were all open, so we were right there. I don't watch documentaries. Yeah. It took me 17 years before I went down there again.
Wow.
You know? But anyway, like not to drag this whole thing.
We just wanted to take a moment to, to say, that we definitely are thinking about the people who suffered losses of lives in their family.
Absolutely.
And the police officers and the firefighters and everyone who helped out. We remember them.
Yes.
Okay, moving on.
Next.
What, how do you follow that up? So when I was in outpatient treatment locally, and this was probably the fifth one that I had gone to, compelled by a court, I met a gentleman who is sort of known in our town because you see him everywhere. He walks everywhere. You see him. Have you seen the can man?
Every town has a guy like this.
You know,
he's on a mission.
And
always,
I've seen him for years, and I always want. And a couple times I saw him at an AA meeting. He never talked or anything, but I was like, all right, he's a friend of Bill's, as we say. And and so when I got into my group a couple of years ago around here, and I saw him there, I was like almost like meeting a celebrity. I was a little bit like starstruck. I'm like, oh man, I couldn't wait to hear what this guy had to say. I'm like, what's this guy's story?
Well, and that's the thing, when you walk around and you see him, and he's always so focused and intense.
Oh my gosh.
Walking around town, you wonder, what is this guy's story? But you could never ask him because he looks a little nuts. You know?
And over a couple of years, I have teased out of him by sitting into therapy. I've been in therapy with John the Can Man of our town's fame for a couple of years.
Right.
And so we kind of got a friendship going. Every time I see him walking, I'm in my car, I honk my horn. He comes into my shop. Every third day or so, he's in here talking about the Mets. And of course, I'm very polite because we've known each other, you know. And he turns out he's got 9 years clean off of crack.
Excellent.
And he's got kind of a hard life. Without going into too much about his story, he's on the outs with his family. And he was living in like a trailer next to a house on sort of the industrial side of a main road here. And let me say that if you're listening to this from other states, like trailers where we are very rare. Those just not, there's no room for them kind of where we are. It's just not a thing really. So it's unusual already that he was renting a trailer.
I can't picture where that is.
It's like right next to, you're going to bleep that? Yeah. right near that. I'm just giving you more work. And in any case, so I get to hear his story as it goes. So long story short, his old man that I've heard him talk about him all the time, you know, in groups and stuff. Anyway, he passes away, his father.
Recently.
Like a week ago.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's rough.
And he comes in here, and not only that, but his only connection to therapy, to his psychiatrist, to group meetings was this outpatient place, which was now closed.
Due to COVID.
COVID. And also the AA meeting he was going to, even though it was one a week. I mean, this kept him going. He was getting medicine from the psychiatrist, mm-hmm. and this was keeping him in check. And now that's happened, and then his father dies. And on top of all of that, the town has kicked him out of his trailer because they're saying it's illegal.
This all happened in the same
week. In like
week.
A week, yeah. Jeez, you know what I mean?
Poor guy.
So he's been, yeah, I know, and he comes in here, and we had a very standoffish relationship. Not standoffish, but, you know, even though we would get into personal stuff, he doesn't emote that much. He's
doesn't look like he emotes very
He doesn't.
Much.
And so the other day, he came in here, and he's like, I just got to call my therapist and yell at her because he's unhappy. He doesn't like doing the phone therapy. The guy definitely doesn't have a computer, so he's not doing Zoom right. meetings. He was screaming at her because he's so frustrated but the way things are going. And then he just breaks down crying in my shop.
Wow.
And I was just like, wow, you know. And I just went over to him and I just like, I didn't hug him. I was like, what am I supposed to do here? You know? So I gave him the like,
pat him on the back.
I gave him the pat with a clockwise rub and then a pat,
right.
Okay. You know, I was trying not to be too like, I don't know if he's going to like flip out and bite my arm. but I'm trying to be, you know, conciliatory and it was just really powerful. You know, and he's just, it just made me feel like, you know, this COVID has really, really made people who are depending on these services that they're putting them in a spot. And that's why we have the overdose rate up 60% compared to last, you know. And on top of it, he's out of spite not taking his medication, which he takes for depression and anxiety. Mm. So he's, I'm not taking that fucking medicine and Dr. So-and-so, blah, blah, blah. I said, dude, I'm like, do you have your medicine? He's like, yeah, I got a plenty. I said, when was the last time you took it? I'm trying not to give him like doctor right. advice, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
But I'm like, man, I don't think you should be stopped taking your medicine, you know? And it was just so heavy. And just to see him, you know, like in this spot, you know, and like, but it's just like, it's really hard. Cause how do you help someone like that? You know?
Well, I mean, I think you help him the way you helped him because, you know, his
I tell him not to use his,
right.
too. I'm like,
but I mean, his problems are so much bigger than anything you could deal with.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's why he's got all these other avenues.
Yeah. I mean, he's on Social Security, so he's 64 right. or older. Right. So he has an income.
I mean, I don't know. What can you do? If there are no live meetings, you can't tell him to go to a meeting if, you know,
right.
Did he resolve things with his therapist? His therapist sounds like she wins the Saint of the
Year. She's amazing.
Award.
So I did hear them cause he was, thank God nobody walked into my shop. But he's on the phone with her and I could hear her from his phone and he was like, kind of like, you know, letting me hear it while he was talking to her. And right. she definitely smoothed him out. And after he said, I'm never coming back, screw you, blah, 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 blah. Then a minute later, he was like, all right, so you'll call me Monday? You know what I mean? And right. I actually did something that I wasn't sure I should do. The day that he came in and broke down and left ready to tear someone's head off, maybe his own, I actually called the outpatient. Now, I haven't been to that outpatient in since January. So, but they know me there. But I said, you know what? I feel like he's not telling them about him, about his father that had died. He didn't tell them that he lost housing.
Right.
And I was just, and that he's not taking his medication. And I'm like, who's going to advocate for this guy if I don't?
You know,
it really put me in a weird spot, but I finally thought about it and I did call and I said, hey, I'm a friend of John's, I'm a former patient. And I just told him like, listen, he really needs help right now. You know, cause I know that they're like a local organization that doesn't just do drug counseling. They help families,
right.
You know, like, every Christmas our church like donates, you know, gifts for, they pick a family and so they do stuff like that and they have to be able to help with housing, you know? And, you know, it's one of those things. I don't typically say things like, I'm going to pray for that, you know, even though I might like, and this is a situation where, yeah, I am definitely praying for this guy. Whether that means anything is anybody's guess. But, you know, that's just a really tricky situation.
It really sort of brings to the forefront, you know, the problems that COVID-19 have created for everybody.
The mental health cost.
The mental health field. Also sort of bring, you know, if you're relying on meetings to stay sober and all of a sudden there are no meetings, what the hell are you supposed to do with
yourself? And you're not a guy who goes online.
And some people
online.
Just can't do the Zoom meetings. Like this guy,
he only just got a phone.
Right. He's not going to figure out how to get on a Zoom meeting.
No.
You know?
I mean, the phone, just being on the phone for him doing these meetings is driving him
and
crazy.
And 9 years off a crack is pretty darn good.
It's braggable, especially, you know, knowing what he'd been through.
Yeah.
And his father didn't put him in the will or he wrote him out of it. He tried to go back to the family home where his sister and autistic brother, who he had been caring for, are living, and she won't let him come to the house. So he has nowhere to stay. The police came, he said he was trespassing and get out of here. And
So where's he now?
According to, he says he's been, I don't want to say exactly where he's sleeping, but he's not in a motel the last couple nights. But he has a couple spots in town and he's basically on the streets right now. He's waiting for his social security check to clear. He works, you know, he does the cans. He's the guy with the, you know, the shopping cart and the cans. He says he does about $20 a day on that.
Well, it's not enough for a hotel room.
No, but I don't know. What's Social Security? Like $400 a week or something? I don't know.
It depends on how much you paid into it and all. You know.
Well, I've got a lot more time before I can retire, you know, with the help of the government.
Yeah. That's, you know, even there when we're ready to retire. Who even knows?
Yeah. It's just, man, like those are the people that I've been thinking about, like where COVID is really hurting people is people who are not set up to, like, who don't just go on their iPhone and Zoom a meeting. Like, forget being comfortable with it in the first place. Like, that's a whole other thing.
Yeah, that's
people being uncomfortable doing that.
You can get over that level of uncomfortability.
Yeah. He bought this phone so he could do these phone consultations. He didn't have a phone. He doesn't have a car. Huh. And, you know, people like that are going to suffer the worst,
right?
You know, that they can't catch up. And maybe that's a microcosm of a much larger issue of technology sort of leaving people behind. And that's a much broader
problem. It sort of gets us to the discussion we were having about the success rate of AA that we've sort of dropped in every once in a while, like, you know, 5%, whatever. And there'll be more to say on that later. But the funny thing is, when you look at the success rate of 12-step programs, the success rate varies depending on who you're studying. So if you're taking a look at people who can afford to go to a nice cushy rehab or have health insurance and have social support, the rate is much higher among those people because they're motivated and they have a deep well of resources to draw on. But people like John the Can Man and others who are released from prison, perhaps sent into a program, or who don't have health insurance or who don't have any method of social support, the success rate is even lower than 5%. So
it is. And that's what, you know, I've spent a lot of time in meetings and I've seen a lot of anecdotal evidence of people who it seems to have helped.
Yes.
I mean, I just really know how it helped me. And when I first tried to get sober in the program, you know, the guy that took me under his wing, so to speak, definitely Definitely, almost, you know, I'd say saved my life, got me into that program. We were taking a meeting a week into the psych ward of Syosset. Mm-hmm. We started our own Living Sober, that book, an AA book. Mm-hmm. We did our own meeting like that we started. So I was heavily involved in it.
Right.
True story, the way that I got fired as a... as his sponsee is, his neighbor had a Super Bowl party, and it's still, if I ever see him around the Super Bowl, I say, "Hey, you having a party?" Because I got wasted at my sponsor's, you know, Super Bowl party, because one of his friends was drinking, and so it was in the neighbor's place. So there was beer there, and I'm there, my sponsor invited me, and I got wasted. And,
find out.
Oh my God. Yeah. And I thought I was getting away with it when I was like slip sliding around. I'm like, oh, I'm fine. I'm just, oh. And he's like, oh. I remember the next day I tried to play it off like nothing happened. I called him and I'm like, Hey, how you doing, Mark? And da 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 da. And he's like, do you remember last night? And I tried to like be like, oh yeah, you know, it sucks and whatever, you know, boring game, right? I mean, nice people at that party. He's like, Ned, you got wasted. Like, you didn't even just sneak a drink. He's like, you got wasted, you know? And he wasn't so like angry with me so much as he was just completely baffled. Yeah, that's a word he used to use to describe me a lot. He would, like, things would happen to me. I would flip my car. I flipped my car once. I would get in car accidents all the time. Miraculously, I only got one DWI, but somehow I would get in these horrific accidents and then they would not like breathalyze me and I didn't die. And then I would get back to it. I'd call him, be like, I gotta get back on the horse. I gotta get back to meetings. And then I'd drink again. And, you know, I would be honest. I started to get more honest with him because I started to realize how futile.
Well, he probably started to realize.
Yeah.
And then, a few things too. Yeah. I mean, that's a pretty alpha move getting hammered at your sponsor's Super Bowl party. You know,
and he said, I remember him saying right around when he was getting rid of me, he said, like, what has to happen to you? Like, what is it going to take for you to get this?
Did he fire you as a?
Yeah, he did. He was an insurance agent. I went to his office to talk. We were going to do some step. We were doing step work and stuff like that. And he's like, Nat, he said, I don't think I can help you. That's pretty much what he said. Right. I was actually drunk during that meeting. You know, I drove that drug. So I was just like, okay, man. And I was a little teary eyed about it. And I still think once in a while I text him. He's a really great guy. Like if I went back to AA, it would be to visit with this guy.
Okay.
And some of the people that I had met in the room. So like I got a lot. But what's really hard is it didn't fix me. I mean, I know it's not supposed to fix you, but I wasn't able to maintain any, you know, enduring sobriety. Like I would get 6 months, 8 months.
Right.
And then the AA people, what do they say? It's your fault, right? You're constitutionally incapable of being honest, I think is what they say.
Right. Well, and so I know it's not on the outline, but let's go there anyway, because that kind of hits something that my wife and I were discussing. I say discussing, arguing about last weekend. Maybe we're asking too much of AA because, you know, I was talking to Erin about the podcast and we were going out for Indian food.
Right.
And she listens to the podcast. God bless her. Sometimes even all of it. And hi, honey. And
she's cool, by the way. I always have to throw that
in. Yes, she is. She's the best. Yes. But she really was upset because she's like, you know, you guys rag on AA and you're saying it has this 5% success rate, but really AA is just like a book club that you go to in the neighborhood, because if you're looking for, you know, lasting sobriety and recovery, the last place you should be going to is a room full of untrained people, like, you know, like her dad. She's like, my dad is a mailman. He's not qualified. You know, he's not qualified to help people not drink, you know? Right. And so I was like, you know, that's interesting, you know, but it tends to be the option that most people are presented with. And so then we get home and I'm thinking, oh, okay, we don't have to talk about that anymore. But she's sitting in the kitchen on WebMD and the National Institute of Health website saying, I'm going through this, and the first four pages, there's not a single reference to 12-step and there. And And it got me starting to think, like, you know, that's really interesting because, you know, we've always operated under the assumption that AA is the go-to thing that people go to first,
it
right?
It's the
front
treatment.
Line. It's the treatment.
It's it.
But if you look on the, and I did go to WebMD, not that I disbelieve her.
Oh, is this actually an argument?
Well, you guys are really... it was a heated discussion, let's say. I wasn't arguing.
Right. I have learned not to not argue as well. You cannot win. There's no argument you can win against your wife.
But WebMD, on four pages on alcohol use disorder, there is not one mention of a 12-step group. On the National Institute of Health website, when you
behavioral
get to the bottom,
treatments.
it talks about medication, mm-hmm. behavioral treatments, and it also mentions AA sort of at the end as sort of
mutual
like an add-on,
support groups, right?
Which is what her point was. Like, that's the sort of support group that you should have after you go through the cognitive behavioral therapy,
right.
After you see a therapist, after you detox, after you do all this stuff, mm-hmm. And that 12-step should be something that you do in addition to all the other stuff.
A piece of the puzzle.
And honestly, I kind of agree with that.
I 100%. I agree with that too. Here's the thing though. When I had the most success, I was doing, well, until this most recent, run of being sober. But when I was first doing this, when I had the most success, I was going to AA 3 or 4 times a week. I was going to outpatient therapy where I was being tested, mm-hmm. seeing a psychiatrist. I was on depression
okay,
medication.
So you had the whole panoply of treatment.
And that's what really worked right. at that time. When I was really bad, when you'd call me like an acute, substance use disorder period or whatever, that's what like stopped it. That's what finally would get a hold of it. I mean, that first time. And I always thought, that should be talked about in the rooms. And if they would just be more honest about people should do AA, sure. But don't throw away your psych meds if your doctor prescribes them to you. Don't throw away your therapist who's a professional working with you,
right.
move through, a PTSD maybe or anything like that. And like a more holistic approach.
I would think if your therapist tells you something that conflicts with something in the program, you should trust the therapist, not the program.
I would,
So,
yeah. But that gets tricky. Like, or what if you have this overbearing sponsor,
right.
Telling you,
Well, and that's the whole cult of personality thing that pops up in, right. in there sometimes. And, people need to go into that with eyes wide open. But again, that circles back around to the idea of who has access to those kinds of treatments.
Right.
Exactly.
I have insurance.
Middle class, mm-hmm. and you have insurance. You can access all that. If you are like John out mm-hmm. here, who he may have had, he's a bad example because he has Medicaid or Medicare or whatever.
Right, and they pay for that.
They pay for that. But if you're just a regular guy out on the street and you right. and you don't have a pot to piss in and you can't afford to go and see a therapist or something.
Well, that's a case for Medicare for all, right?
Yeah, I don't.
Every man, woman, and child should,
And they should treat substance abuse like equal to other conditions.
I mean, it is a degenerative. I mean, I was having some.
Well, we don't know. we've argued the opposite.
That's true, man.
It's
true. I was just having this kind of discussion on one of the boards about like I was just saying like is it a disease? Looking back on all of my experiences, understanding how I got through it, does it feel like a disease to me? And does it matter if it feels like a disease to me?
And that's the thing, is the label relevant at all?
Right.
Is calling it a disease make it any more or less serious?
I call it a unicorn, but
right.
So long as the treatment stays the same.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of naming it, it's sort of like, do you ever, watch these shows where the person's possessed by a demon and part of the way they get control of the demon is they find out its name. Have you seen this?
Uh-huh.
And it's like, once they get the demon's name, it's like they can, control right. it.
Well,
get out, Beelzebub.
There's power in labeling things.
Right. So I think it's still really important how we talk about it. Lots of people, myself included, when I was told, hey, this is a disease you have no control over. As soon as I heard that, I go, great. I have no control. I have an excuse.
Right.
I don't know.
Takes away your agency.
Yes. And I've later learned to think about it, and it's more nuanced than that. You know, like initially, probably what drove me to drink to a point where I became addicted mm-hmm. was something else, not a disease. It was whatever. You know, I went over this with my psychiatrist forever. Like, why? And guys in the rooms, one of the things that I heard that really meant a lot to me was, if you're in a burning building, you don't sit around figuring out who started the fire. You just get out.
Right.
Right. Like, do the treat. Don't you worry about that later, you know?
There's something to that, I think. But it can go too far the other direction. Like, that's what the whole admitting powerlessness and looking to God business, you know, throwing yourself in the mercy of the creator is maybe less effective than some other methods. But
yeah, it drives me nuts when I see people posting like, Jesus got me through this, or Jesus got me sober without him. And I usually, like, because I'm a Christian and I believe Jesus can help you, you know, get through things. But I think it's...
Turns water into wine.
Exactly. Turn my wine back into water. but you shouldn't, like, forget that you're doing it, you know? But if it lets that person, somehow it gives them that inner, call it a spiritual placebo effect. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm not telling my kids there's no Santa Claus. And I've said that before with regards to, you know, it's okay if for them believing that gets them sober and keeps them that way. I don't want to burst that bubble.
Right.
You know, and people would argue on whether you should burst that bubble, you know?
I don't know. It's so circular, because then you keep going back to, you know, you don't want to burst the bubble, but on the other hand, you know, you want it to be effective, and it's effective for some and it's not effective for all.
Right.
And the end goal of recovery or treatment should be to have the greatest effect on the most people. But right. on the other hand, if you can target individual recovery theories to individual people, why not do that? I mean, it's a big mess, you know?
It's a big mess. And that's why I think AA is so popular, because it's a pretty good... Well, maybe not so good because of the low, the low rate of success. But it's a catch-all.
If you're middle class and you have health insurance and you have good social support network and you haven't burned all the bridges with your family, it has an excellent rate of success.
Well, there you go. Like a lot of other things. Yeah. So, would you want to go on to recovery in the news? Yeah,
recovery in the news this week. Recovery in the news sort of dovetails quite nicely with what we were just talking about, because I came across this article from September 15th, the Philadelphia Inquirer. The headline is, "Some doctors avoid prescribing popular addiction treatment." And only about half of the physicians who are licensed to prescribe, how do you pronounce that, Nat?
Buprenorphine. Otherwise known as Suboxone.
Right. Okay. It's the same thing. I'm going to say Suboxone.
Yeah, it's easier.
So only about half of them actually prescribe it to patients, which is interesting, because 100% of those doctors are allowed to prescribe regular opiates to their patients.
Yes.
Without being specially licensed.
I remember that. I had to find a special doctor get it.
Yes. And they're only allowed to have 27 patients at a time.
And insurance doesn't cover those visits. I have good insurance. When I got my Suboxone, mm-hmm. That same doctor who I normally saw when it was my Suboxone visit, it was out of pocket. I had to pay like $100 or $200. So it's really like being a drug dealer in that sense. Like,
but it is kind of weird, isn't it, that that these doctors have to go take a class. They're only allowed a certain number of patients. And the doctors, most of them who they interviewed for this article, which I only seem to have the first page of, so interviewed, said, you know, it's more of a hassle than it's worth. And to prescribe this stuff because of, you know, there's continuing education requirements, there's all this other stuff. And the patients, you know, and one of the doctors said, or one of the points of resistance was, well, then my family practice is going to become full of
drug addicts.
and the, you know, the counterpoint to that is, your family practice is already full of drug addicts. You just don't know.
And that is, you know, point well made for sure. Yeah. I mean, look, I was in the Suboxone therapy. It really helped me. But, you know, they made it very difficult in some of the places where I was trying to get approved for it. Mm-hmm. Like when I was in that first outpatient therapy place long ago and far away, all I wanted And maybe that's the problem. I just wanted to get that Suboxone.
Right.
And they treated you like a drug-seeking addict, which I guess that I was.
I mean, you know, shoe fits.
But what I really wanted was not to go chase the dope man. I wanted that over in my life. I just didn't want to be sick so I could have time and mental space to actually start the process of recovery. Mm-hmm. And if it's like physically almost impossible for you to get past these withdrawals, you know, it's extremely helpful. And a lot of people say, use that medication to get you out of the lifestyle of chasing the dope man. Mm-hmm. And I always hated when I was in different groups and I would get in arguments about Suboxone. It was almost always these like tough guy recovery guys like, you take anything, you're not clean, man. And I'm like, dude, my life is completely different.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen, you're professional 12-step therapist.
That's it.
Saying if you take drugs to get off drugs, you're a loser.
You're a loser. You're not clean. And I don't agree with that. And people who I speak to online all the time, you know, they have a lot of feelings about that. They feel inadequate because they know their lives have changed dramatically since they went on MAT, medication-assisted treatment. But they've got people talking in their ear, maybe even their sponsor going, you can't count this clean time. And that's another thing, clean time. We can get into that another time. I had a really interesting post that I made that got like 200 comments on, not on our Facebook page, but I was hoping. And there's a lot of people really feel strongly about day counting and what that means to them. Mm-hmm. You know, and then so people get hung up over like, well, I'm not clean. Or if I'm in jail for 6 months and don't use, is that clean time?
Of course.
It's clean. You're clean.
You could be using it in jail. There's plenty of drugs in jail.
That's what I say, you know? And so, yeah. And I think that's just a dangerous position to take where we're making people, you know, ashamed to seek out medical treatment because
it's ridiculous.
And we're not making the tough guy thing.
We're making it hard on addicts and we're making it hard on doctors too. I mean, it seems to me to be even worse, because you'd reduce the stigma quite a bit if you could walk into any of your general practitioner's office and say, listen, I'm wrestling with this problem and I understand there's a medical treatment for it. Can you help me out?
That would be great.
Would be great. But
will people abuse it? Probably. And in every situation, there's a small percentage of the population who will abuse it. And that is not the rule.
How do you abuse Suboxone?
Some people have mixed it up and shot it, I've heard.
Oh.
You can also... Some people say they get high. I only got high that first time. But the people who are abusing it really are people, you can buy it on the street, and it's the addicts that would only use it when they ran out of money to buy dope. And they just don't want to be sick. So they're not using it to facilitate recovery.
Right.
They're just
not to get sick.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was on it for 2 years, and I was not high for those 2 years. The first time you did it, you feel relief because you're not sick anymore. But you're not high, but you also don't realize the fuzz it puts over your brain. Mm-hmm. Because once I finally came off of it, I was like, oh, you know, it was almost like I didn't realize, you know, that I was a little bit impaired maybe. Or
so is it easier to get off Suboxone than to get off heroin?
It's different for everybody. For me, because I've done both, Suboxone was easier for me.
Do they sort of ratchet it down little by little?
You rip the little, it goes under your tongue and it dissolves. People will say otherwise. I've heard people say, oh, it's the worst, I don't want to get on another drug. And I'm like, well, you're still putting a needle in your arm. And, you know, it's definitely, it's different for everybody. But from my experience, it was not that horrible coming off of it. I had diarrhea for a month or something.
Yikes.
You know what I mean? And that was kind of rough, but you know, nothing like I saw in the movies, and nothing like when I didn't get heroin, you know, and that would start 6 hours, you know, minimum.
Yeah.
After my last sniff, I didn't shoot it. So look, obviously I'm not a doctor. You have a juris doctor. That doesn't really count.
Can't prescribe medicine.
Those are yet. That's one of your yets, right?
That's coming out. I don't know. I was trying going for a lawyer joke, but
did it. See, yeah, I can do the sound effects. So here's my weekly weird news story.
Wait, we still got time.
We got time?
We got time.
Well, we
got
to do the kombucha.
You want to do the kombucha?
You want to do this and then that since
Go ahead, start.
All right, I'll just do it. Suspected brain found on beach in Wisconsin. A construction worker taking a stroll along a beach in Wisconsin was left scratching his head when he stumbled upon what appears to be a brain wrapped in tinfoil. According to a local media report, Jimmy Senda made the gruesome find on Tuesday afternoon while visiting Samuel Myers Park in the city of Racine, looking for sea glass or other odd items, quote, because I like to do artwork at home with the stuff that I find, end quote. The man noticed something unusual in the sand, which it's safe to say he won't be using in any future projects.
Huh. Questions come to mind. Yes. One, there's no indication it was a human brain.
True, true.
Which, you know, didn't Wisconsin go for Trump last time? Yeah, I have to wonder, are there any human brains in Wisconsin?
I don't know.
Sorry, folks. Oh.
You get it?
Yeah, man, there it is. I'm sorry if Wisconsin went for Clinton.
Yes.
I apologize. And you know, we need you to go for Biden this time. So
yes, we do.
Not to interject politics into this.
No politics. Politics, not perfection. Oh wait. So
that's a good one.
So Mike brought some special drinks for me to try.
Yes, we were discussing NA drinks. In fact, the whole reason this all came to be that we're doing a kombucha taste test here is because you had something last weekend that you ordered off the internet that claimed to have herbs in it that made you feel good.
Something, it was like, it looked like crystals. I got it off of the dark web. No, there was a brand called Kin that makes, they call them like adaptogens and whatever. It's supposed to be like in a quote adult tasting beverage, which is an alcohol. It's just maybe a little more complex. It's not just ginger ale. And it has things that like make you calm, but not like directly. And I don't have the whole marketing outlay of it. But I'd like to do like a full review of it. It worked a lot like melatonin made me feel. I just felt a little bit relaxed and I got, it was tired.
Mm. Did it taste good?
I liked it. I did. It was kind of cool. Like, I like that kind of thing. You know, like, I like a Bloody Mary. I don't like the sweet stuff.
Right.
Like, I'll drink a virgin Bloody Mary. I love it. Because I think I just like tomato soup.
Right.
Gazpacho.
It's celery and pepper.
So it's like sipping gazpacho out of a cup. So, yeah, we're definitely going to go do more of this non-alcoholic adult beverages testing. And I saw Mike posted, you know, a picture of his pug and a beautiful, it's a pug, right?
It's a pug.
Okay.
He's a pug.
It was beautiful glass, sweating in the sun, and, you know, it looked like a real adult beverage, and he's blah, 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 kombucha or kombucha. And I realized, I don't know anything about kombucha. I've never tried it. And frankly, I'd never heard of it up until the past like month. Now, all of a sudden, I'm seeing it everywhere.
It's pretty popular. It's basically a fermented tea.
Mixes well with spiced rum, it says.
Does it say that?
It does.
It wouldn't surprise me that it says.
Try this
that.
Flavor with a splash of spiced rum.
So it's got a lot of probiotics in it. It's good for your digestion and so forth. But the fermentation process produces some lactic acid, which makes it taste and smell a little bit like vinegar.
Oh, that sounds lovely.
But for whatever reason, and you know, all the recovery groups that I am in on the internet and something, people love this shit, right? So about 6 to 8 months ago, I started drinking it. And it was a challenge to get over the taste in the beginning.
Why would you want to keep drinking?
Because I figured there's got to be something to it, right?
I've got to acquire this taste.
This can't just be a marketing, you know, ploy just to get me to drink vinegar.
Or
right?
Can it? I mean, that's kind of what alcohol is,
or
right?
Or can it? But
so what do you have here? What did you
something
bring?
Something funny. Let me just finish my thought. Something funny happened after the first like couple weeks of drinking it is I started to not notice the vinegary taste anymore.
I started to
experience the complexities, the bouquet, if you will.
I will.
Of the different types of kombucha.
Well,
now, the one thing you have to be careful of with kombucha is because it's a fermented product, occasionally there's trace amounts of residual alcohol in it.
Oh, lovely.
And one of the larger kombucha companies got into a bit of trouble because they were putting a label on saying the alcohol had been removed, but the alcohol in fact had not been removed.
So how many of these do I have to drink to get drunk is what I want to know. Isn't that what everybody wants to know?
So this particular brand that I'm not going to advertise, I'll put a link in the show notes. They were the brand that got into trouble. So they've become quite,
So you're giving me alcohol essentially.
They've become quite aggressive at separating their alcohol kombucha from their non-alcohol kombucha.
Okay.
And you can always tell by the cap. The white cap means no alcohol. The black cap means, you know,
it's all
between
good.
Okay. 2% and 3%.
All right. Right.
So even the ones with trace amounts, you're looking at like 0.5, which is the same as a ripe banana.
All right.
So anyway,
so I'm willing to take that risk.
So this
I'm risking
one, you know
my
what? I'm
going to
take
here.
This one off the table because it's a brand I've never used.
Okay.
So I don't want to accidentally get you drunk.
I'm sure you do. So that would be great for the
show.
I'll
give you a choice.
Yes.
There's the Gingerade one or the Pink Lady Apple.
Oh, I think the ginger I'm going to go for.
You don't like Pink Lady apples.
Ooh. All right. I like ginger ale. So I'm a fan of ginger ale. I like adult tasting beverages, but no more beer for me. So this is going to be one of those things where I'm really trying to reach out to these adult beverages that are complex in flavor and do not contain alcohol.
And that market has increased so much the last few years because what is the one you had called?
Kin.
There's others. There's like so many others.
Yeah, now on Facebook, now that I bought that, I'm seeing all the
ads.
Yes, if
you click on it. So here you go.
All right.
It's whether you want to smell it before you drink it is entirely up to you.
Okay, folks, here I'm going to smell it. Ooh, it's interesting. Yeah. All right, here I go, everyone. I'm about to take a sip. Wow. I like that.
Do you really?
Yes, I do.
Huh.
It's sort of like this particular flavor tastes like ginger ale without sugar, really.
Yes.
So it's like it's the ginger ale flavor, but it's that complex flavor is coming through.
Yeah,
I like this. This would be great on like ice or something. Or
that's my picture.
Yeah.
You know,
great with spiced rum, too.
Yeah, it would be, yeah. But you can put, it's basically, it's fermented like tea, right? So
I like this.
You can flavor it with anything, and they do. Around the holiday, they have like a Christmas
flavor.
Yeah,
this should make a great, like, right. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I think I like it. Mikey likes it.
Just make sure you read labels when you buy it, because some of them have trace amounts of booze.
Well, I can just tell my wife, you know, it's like, no, this doesn't have alcohol. You know, Mike said I could drink it, and then sneak them in there. But of course, I would never do that.
It is
never
good. Do. Funny thing is they say, you know, for the first week that you drink it, you should only drink like 4 ounces at a time until your tummy gets used to it.
Tummy? Why? Yeah. What's going to happen?
I don't know.
Explosive diarrhea? Projectile vomiting?
You've already had that for a month straight, so it's not Suboxone. Right. I think you'll be all right.
All right. I like it. And what's this other? Should I try the other flavor? Or?
You could.
All right, let me do that since you brought it.
Well,
before you do it, I don't want to like ruin it because once you open it, doesn't it have to be?
No, the cap, you can put the cap back on. It's fine.
All right. So second flavor we're doing. Let's see.
53 minutes, by the way.
Yeah, there's a lot in the show that might need some editing. You know, this week, guys, we're both kind of like having a rough time.
Yeah, things have been a little crazy around the house.
The kids going back to school and both of our wives being teachers. And
then the work.
And then, you know, Mike has a job and I just sort of sit in my store waiting for people to buy things. All right, let me try this. And this is, what's the flavor?
This is Pink Apple.
Pink Apple.
So this is a different brand.
Okay.
So they're all a little different.
Pink Lady Apple. Here we go. Smells nice. Got a nice nose. Here we go. Ooh.
No.
Well. Okay. This is the vinegar flavored.
Okay.
Right?
More vinegar in that one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That, the other one was nice and sweet.
Okay.
Interesting. It's definitely just the way Mike described it. There is a vinegar flavor, but it's also not so offensive that you want to vomit. So I don't immediately want to vomit. So let me just try it again. It's one of those things like got to try it again. Here we go.
My wife won't touch this stuff. She says it smells like warm baby vomit is her description of the taste, which I disagree, but that's me.
Okay. So My final thought on the second one, Pink Lady Apple, is wouldn't reach for this first, but I would definitely have the ginger aid. That one I liked. I'm happy I finally got to. Yeah, that's strong, man.
So there you go, folks. Kombucha.
Down the hatch.
Pick some up near you.
Yeah, and if you guys have your favorite non-alcoholic beverages, post it on our Facebook page. We'd like to see what everybody else is drinking. Paul Churchill famously on Recovery Elevator likes, I think it was cranberry and seltzer.
Yeah.
And that's like his go-to drink.
Right.
And it's a good discussion. It gets you excited about, you're not just, I like Coca-Cola, but it's fun to do like.
You get bored with the same stuff all the time.
Exactly.
Seltzer water with a twist of lemon.
I think it's a good thing. Yeah. Not crazy about the non-alcoholic beers, though. I'm not on board with that. I think a lot of people aren't, and we could talk about that in another episode.
That's a discussion.
Yeah, because you're just drinking beer. I mean, that's not helping you not want to drink beer,
I don't know. I have one every once in a while. It's never made me want to go have a real beer.
All right,
but I also never want to drink six of them.
Well, there you go. Or 12.
Yeah. 12, it's like two beers, right?
Yeah. So that was great. I think overall, I mean, we had a pretty good show. It was a little stops and starts. And, our apologies this week. We got a lot
going on.
They
won't even notice it once it goes through the editing
machine.
Oh, yeah,
post-production. I'll solve it in post-production. You'll make me sound like James Earl Jones. And everything will be good. So I think that's all for this week. What do you think, Mike?
I think we've hit all the high notes.
All the low notes and all the high notes. So as we say, non proficiat perfectum.
Yes, progress, not perfection.
See you next time.